you asked, how did I heal from that? And I think a large part of it was writing about it. And it was a little bit removed. Like, when I sat down to write about my experience, I think it was a year or 2 years later.
Hi, I'm Ebony, and I believe that stories change lives, and everyone has a story worth telling. Sometimes, unfortunately, we let our self-doubt get in the way of us writing our stories and sharing our stories. So that's why I created Motivation to Write as a source of motivation and inspiration to help writers like you and me share our stories with the world. So I talk to the experts ranging from entrepreneurs to marketers to authors to therapists to psychologists who share their knowledge and their advice to help writers like you and me step into our full potential.
Nicole Starbuck is a wellness coach, intuitive, quantum energy healer, and the author of Stress Size: How My Hunger for Control Almost Killed Me. Although she first discovered her intuitive abilities at age 9, it wasn't until she hit rock bottom in her 20s that Nicole stepped into her full power. Nicole shows women worldwide how to tap into their intuition and live an inspired life. I am here with Nicole Starbuck, and I am so excited because Nicole was a guest. That was almost 2 years ago.
It's been a while. Yeah, it's been a year and a half, 2 years. Yeah.
When I started this podcast, you were one of my first guests. And you know what? This is why you're also so memorable, because you were the one that really started me on thinking about my values. I remember you shared your values. And I was like, yeah, I wrote down my values somewhere, but I don't know exactly where they are. But I remember we had that conversation. And after that conversation, I went back and I reevaluated my values. And now it's just, that's a huge part of my life. Like, I know what they are. I teach my students how to identify their values. And we use them as like guiding principles for everything we do. So thank you for that, Nicole.
I'm so glad I could help.
Yes, yes. Now, tell us a little bit about yourself, for those that did not hear the episode like 2 years ago. But I know that you are an intuitive person. You're a creative person. You kind of do a lot of things. You're an author. So let's start with what you do.
Yes. Well, I am a creatrix, oracle, and healer. So I do all things intuitive, and I'm a psychic empath and clairvoyant. So that plays a role in what I do as well. And I'm really into helping people heal from the things that are holding them back so they can move forward with their lives with clarity and confidence.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And how do you, in your energy work, is it mostly remote now, or do you see people in person?
It's mostly remote. Yeah. I mean, Zoom is surprisingly powerful. That eye contact allows you to connect with people, even though it's from a distance.
Right. Yeah. And do you find that your clients are, I guess if they're coming to you, they are open to like the whole energy concept, the whole oracle concept, or is there some resistance?
No, usually it's because they're already interested in those topics and they're coming to me because they need just a little nudge. I honestly believe they already have the answers. They just need someone to help build that confidence to trust themselves.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, I'm interested to hear again, because I'm sure you shared this 2 years ago, but how did you even get into this like healing, intuitive space in your life?
I've known for a long time that I have that spiritual gift. I actually, when I was 9, I predicted that a bird would poop on me. And then like a second later, it landed on my shoulder, the poop. And that's how I knew that I had a gift. And it that disgusted me, but it also kind of freaked me out a little bit, because I would see flashes of images of things that were going to happen, and they would happen often right away. Yeah. And it would scare me because I would think, well, what am I supposed to do with this information? Yeah. So I lived with anxiety for a long time because I felt like I couldn't control what was going to happen. Mm-hmm. And then as I got older, I learned how to channel that in a way that I could release control over the outcome and just learn to adapt according to the things that I was seeing, or to inform people of the things that I was seeing so they could adapt. And eventually I was just able to come to terms that this is how I am, and this is a great gift, and I can use it to help people.
Now, did your family sense this about you at that young age? because I can remember, like, when I was young, I don't think I had that type of intuitiveness that you did, but, like, I didn't, you know, think a bird was going to poop on me, and they did. Oh, my gosh, if that happened, oh, my gosh. But I remember this one particular moment. I was sitting in my mother's car, and I had, it's so hard to explain, but I had this thought, like, there's another me. Like, who am I? Like, who's the me behind the I, or who's the I behind the me? Like, I had a very clear experience of, like, an observer part of me. Mm-hmm. And that there was something a lot more significant than just, like, the human Ebony sitting in this car experiencing life. Like, there was another dimension to me. And I remember in that moment, it kind of freaked me out, but I never forgot it. And I've always been very observant of things and how things connect. Mm-hmm. And I remember feeling a little bit out of place, like no one completely understood, like, my perspective or even me. So I did that. Did you run into that as a kid, like not being understood?
Yeah, you know, I feel like my mother has that ability too. And she grew up in an environment where that wasn't fostered or cultivated in any way. So I think she ended up having a lot of anxiety as well. I would just remember her worrying a lot when I was growing up. And in my household, we were conservative Christian. So, you know, things like that, energy work, meditation, anything spiritual outside of, like, the religious church and the Bible were kind of frowned upon. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until my mid-20s that I learned that the gift of prophecy is actually a God-given ability. And whether you believe in God, source, universe, or whatever the case may be, that's a gift. That's something that is bestowed upon everyone to an extent. And then in others, they're able to develop that a little more precisely.
Yeah. Same thing, Nicole. I grew up in a very Christian, like, Baptist, no nonsense. You have a problem, you pray, and God will take care of it. We don't have time for none of this intuitive stuff, this energy stuff. And so that's kind of another aspect of it, because I always felt like my family and my, like, church family, they had all the answers. And they had the right answers. And you just don't question God. So you just go with what we believe. So I never really felt like I had the space to fully explore that part of me, that kind of sense that there was way more happening than what was meeting the eye.
Yeah.
So, Nicole, now tell us about your writing.
Yes.
You authored a book a few years ago. Right?
Yeah, I have one published book called Stress Size, How My Hunger for Control Almost Killed Me. Mm-hmm. That's about my journey with my desire for control and how that just totally consumed me. And I ended up with an eating disorder called orthorexia, which is a hyper obsession with eating health foods. So, like, only eating foods that are healthy and over exercising. And my experience with working in corporate America on the fast track to, like, being a manager at a major retailer, and how all of these things just were working against me, so that, you know, I was really stressed out and overwhelmed, and I ended up sick in the hospital. So that's the book that I have out that's published. And then I also have several other manuscripts, some of which are finished, some of which are not, still in progress. So writing is definitely a huge part of my life and how I process experiences. And a lot of my work is nonfiction based on my own life, mm-hmm. but also very much solution oriented. So I'm not one to just sit around and talk about my problems and these are the things that I went through and oh, how hard they were, but also like, this is what I learned and this is how I can take this experience and help somebody. I believe that pain has purpose and that everything that I go through is there to help me guide someone else through that same experience.
Yeah. Okay. I love that. Pain has purpose. I want to go back to this. What's orthorexia? Is that what it's called?
Orthorexia. Yeah.
And did this develop while you were in corporate, or had it shown up earlier in your life?
Mm-hmm. So I remember, because I was trying to trace back, like, where did this come from? I remember watching the documentary Super Size Me.
Yeah.
I stopped eating fast food. I remember feeling like I didn't fit in with my mom's side of the family, my dad's side of the family. They're both immigrants. So my mom's from Mexico, my dad's from Nicaragua. So both sides of the family are immigrants as well. And they all spoke Spanish. So I would go visit. I didn't speak Spanish. I always felt like apart, like set apart in that. And then the whole like psychic thing, like you feel a little different. And I stopped eating the foods that they were eating, like carne asada, the tilapia, like, you know, grill. Yeah. I stopped eating the ethnic foods because I wanted more control over myself and my identity. And that was in my early teens. So that was like at 12, 13. And then getting to be a young adult, the orthorexia really started when I was graduating from college. I had just gotten married. We graduated from college. We were moving to Denver from Tucson. And there's just a lot of changes. And then, you know, starting a new job, and the job wasn't what I thought it would be. So this idea of like taking control of my life, just I took it to an extreme for sure.
Yeah. Okay. That's so, and that's really young, around 12 or 13. Mm-hmm. That's like the age that's a difficult age. Like that's middle school.
Yeah. Middle school is so awkward.
Yes. Yes. That's the age where you kind of feel like you're out of control, where you start to feel that in middle school. And so how did you heal that?
I think it took me waking up in the hospital to realize that I had a problem. And the doctors wanted to just prescribe like anxiety medication to help me like calm down. And that was never really for me. You know, that's never really been something that resonated with me. I think it works. Medication works for a lot of people, but it wasn't something that I wanted to do. And so I realized that I needed to make some changes. So one of the first things I did, and it was hard because I was the primary wage earner at the time, I quit my job. So I stepped down. I was an assistant store manager, and they were like pushing me on the fast track to be a manager and like eventually a district manager. And I quit, I stepped down, I started going part-time, and then I found another job. And then just from there, I started feeling like I was meant for something more, that like I call it destined for greatness. And it makes me sound like I'm tooting my own horn, but I always had this feeling like I was put on this earth to do something significant. And I was doing things that I thought would make me happy because they satisfied this idea of the American dream. Mm-hmm. You know, go to school, get good grades, get a good job, like earn good money and you'll be successful, right? Like that's the American dream. And I realized that wasn't the dream that was in my soul. That wasn't what I had in my heart. And so even though I got another job, I realized that wasn't for me. And I have this funny way of manifesting things, like almost negatively, where like I didn't want to quit the job because I needed the money.
Yeah.
But then like the company went out of business. Mm-hmm. So I was forced to get another job.
Exactly.
And same thing. It's like, well, that job wasn't necessarily the thing for me. And I didn't want to quit, right? Because I need the money. And that company went out of business. So it's like I keep manifesting the next step. Because if you don't take that step on your own, the universe is going to find a way to make it happen for you.
Yes. I was just talking about this on my last episode. Like, I think, first of all, I have great admiration for you for quitting your job, because that's so scary. It takes a lot of courage, because it's like you say, we're so hooked on the idea that there's no way I'm going to be able to survive. There's so much fear that kicks in. And it's that fear that's really driving the whole physical manifestation of the whatever the disease or whatever it is that we're feeling. And if we can learn to let go of that fear, but that's so hard when you had a husband that was helping you.
Yeah. He still helps me. We're still married.
Yeah. At the time you quit the job though, you had the support. Yeah. So, but even still, cause you were the primary breadwinner. What I mean, was that, were those conversations you guys had, like, were they tense, and how did he feel about that?
Well, I think for him, my health and happiness has always been at the forefront of his mind. So when it was very clear that this role and this lifestyle I was living was not conducive to my well-being, you know, he was very supportive and encouraged me to quit.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. But it's interesting that, as you said, that, I mean, they ended up going out of business anyways.
I know. I feel terrible. I do that all the time. It's like, like, you know, one day I had a migraine and I'm like, I should probably not be doing work right now. Right. Like, I should probably stop. And I didn't. And the whole internet went out for the whole block, the whole neighborhood.
Oh, like, my gosh.
I need to take a rest. Like, I do this all the time. I need this.
Yeah. But that's so true. I can remember when I was going through a career shift. It wasn't like a complete change in career, but I was basically moving from one department to another department at my job, and I was resisting it, and I could feel it coming months in advance, and I just would not make the move myself. So I was literally kind of forced into it. And that was very painful. And that happens too in relationships. It happens in any area where there needs to be a change and you're not willing to move because you're very scared. You're going to eventually be pushed out.
Yeah. But you asked, how did I heal from that? And I think a large part of it was writing about it. And it was a little bit removed. Like, when I sat down to write about my experience, I think it was a year or 2 years later. But it was almost like channeled energy. Like, mm-hmm. all of the details of everything that had happened just like came through me and through my pen. And I just was able to write like with such clarity.
Mm-hmm.
That I think part of it was, you know, not being so emotionally attached to the experience so much, but then also just being open to like, hey, I have this thing that I went through and I think it's worth sharing.
Mm-hmm. So talk about the channeling, because I had another guest a few years ago, and her name is Bridget Jackson Buckley, and she's an author. And she went through a kind of traumatic experience where during the housing crisis, her family lost this house that they just purchased. And she did something very similar where she just started channeling, like downloading stuff that was coming to her that was in the moment very therapeutic, but she ended up publishing it into a book.
Yeah.
So, and I think a lot of, when you mentioned channeling, a lot that kind of turns people off sometimes because they feel like it's some type of wooey, spiritual, some people even associated with demonic stuff. You're channeling it. But can you explain how that works?
I think, I mean, like you say, there's kind of two parts. One is if you're channeling like spirits or even spirit guides or ancestors, which is one side of it, that's the more spiritual side, but also just being open to what you call the divine downloads or the downloads of inspiration. So some people call this inspiration or the muses or just being motivated. So for me, it was just, I set the intention, okay, universe, I am open to this experience of writing about what I went through. And I'm open to whatever happens, whether that gets published or not. And I just want to see what comes out. So what's coming out? And I would just write every day. I would just write. And the story just unfolded, like everything that I went through, starting with, you know, graduating from college and moving and going to the new job and all of those things and the health risks and the things that I went through at the hospital. It just came through. And that's what I would say is channeling, is just being open and allowing whatever comes through to come through.
Mm-hmm. At any point during the channeling process, did you have to stop and say, whoa, this is way too much?
It just happened really fast. You're bringing back so many memories of like what happened. So I had seen there was a writing contest and the winner would get some publishing deal. And I had like 30 or 40 days. It was not a long time. I did not have a long time. And I finished the book in under 30 days. So it just like, wow. Bam, like just came out of me.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
And so when it came out of you after about 30 days, you said?
Mm, it's like a month. Yeah.
Did you at that moment think, oh, I think I can maybe publish this? Or when did that idea come?
Yeah. So I actually got third place. So I was a runner up in the contest. I don't know how many entries there were, but I didn't win the publishing deal, but just that, one, that I could do it, right? Cause they actually finished the thing, and two, that it got recognition. Like it was, significant enough to have placed in the contest, you know, made me think, wow, like I could actually do something with this. And then I just like sat on it for years. I did nothing with it for years. And eventually I was like, you know what, like this, and you know, back then self-publishing wasn't a thing, but now it's like more and more common and people are getting really successful with it. Mm-hmm. I decided to just self-publish it. Mm-hmm. So I actually published it and yeah, been promoting that and sharing that. And
wow. And did you work with an editor?
I did. Yeah. So I hired an editor, and overall, I think the editing process was pretty smooth. There weren't like major changes to the story or the outline. It was more so like grammatical errors. Yeah. Like she told me I use the word just a lot, like just because, or just because I felt like it. Yeah. Like yeah. She counted like 180 instances of just.
Oh, that's so funny.
But I just need to use it. Don't you understand? I just have to have it.
You know, a lot of people do that with well. Well.
Yeah. Well. Another word I overused was that. I was overusing that.
Yeah, that's another one. Yeah. Yeah.
That was eye-opening. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's really good that the editing process went very smoothly for you. So you manifested this book. Now, was there any fear in it going public and people reading it, and how am I going to sell it and what people are going to think about it? And
I think I was more worried for my family to read it. Like my mom read it and she's like, I didn't realize you went through all that stuff. Cause I didn't tell her a lot of things cause she would worry. And like my aunt bought like 2 or 3 copies, and just, you know, my mother-in-law wants to read it. And so these are things that I didn't necessarily share with my family at the time. So I think now for them to read about it is a little bit surprising. But for like, if anything, I think it's just a testament to my resilience and being able to go through something and then come out the other side, and people don't realize, like,
You mentioned something earlier. I want to revisit when you said that when you were younger, you just had this feeling that you were born for greatness. Like there was something else in your life that you were meant to achieve or do. You mentioned something to the fact that it may sound conceited or whatever. And I think I think most of us have that feeling, but we feel exactly the way you do. Like I'm not supposed to say that about myself, but I feel like if we really embraced that and we walked through the fear of becoming that person that we know that we can be, that would do so much healing in our lives. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like a lot of the fear that we hold on to turns into, as we talked about before, some of the physical stuff that we feel in our bodies, some of the diseases that we manifest, the emotions that plague us, right? And it really comes down to fear. And I think it's really interesting how you've used writing as a tool to kind of work through some of that fear, you know, so that you can, that greater part of you that was destined for something, which obviously, publishing that book was a part of that. That happened. You know what I mean? But it's just so interesting how fear has such a stronghold on us.
I think fear stops us even from writing. Like, yes. I know, yeah. Like my mom has things that she's gone through as a child that she's still holding on to, that she's never talked about or written down. And I bought her a journal. And like, you know, a month later, I asked her how it was going with the journal. And she's like, oh, I haven't started it because I'm scared to like think about the things that I went through. And it's hard, you know, working through it, because it brings up old emotions. You can relive it to an extent. You see that in your mind's eye and you're worried what that's going to stir up for you, but it's so cathartic. It's so healing. I've used it. There's another book that I haven't published yet, but I talk about all of my previous relationships that I've had and my journey of sexual discovery and how I like learned how to be an individual and not rely on other people for my identity. And because I was going through a hard time, my husband and I were going through a hard time in our relationship. And I wanted to know, like, why am I having such problems? Like, where does my resistance towards love come from? Mm-hmm. And I wanted to work through that. And I actually, you know, sat down and from the very beginning, I went to my first crush, like all the way through Raleigh, my husband, and I worked through each person, like, and I actually again, channeled their energy and put myself in their shoes and their perspective of them looking at me.
Yeah.
And how I interacted with them.
Yes.
So that I could really understand what it was like in that moment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I had a similar experience recently where I had the man I'm dating tell me that when he hugs me, it feels like he was hugging a little girl, and it bothered him. He said it actually repelled him. And I was shocked, but at the same time, and he mentioned this too, because I had mentioned to him that there had been some trauma, some sexual trauma earlier in my childhood. And he's like, I wonder if this is somehow connected to that. And I realized that it was, because I think that when you hug me, you are hugging that young girl who is very hurt and traumatized. And so what I did was I wrote in the voice of her first. I remember I sat down, got a piece of paper out, and I just wrote out all of the anger that that little girl and the fear that she was feeling. And that was, it was difficult, but I just let it flow. And there were tears, I was crying. And then next I wrote a letter to her as my adult self. And I just basically, I apologized for just suppressing her for all these years and ignoring all of the pain that she went through, because I was just trying to preserve my own self-image as someone who's just very like reasonable and has it all together, and I don't have time for that, you know, childhood nonsense. And then I wrote a third letter as my higher self talking to my adult self, like, Ebony, just know that you're safe, that you have everything you need, that you are magnificent, that, right? And that was just, to go through those three writing projects was life-changing for me. I mean, because it made, as you said, it made me realize like how someone else was experiencing me. And then it also brought to light things that I had totally forgotten about, right? And how that's manifesting and showing up. I mean, you know what? This is actually connecting, Nicole, to like another story about like my mother and just having hard conversations with her about what happened. It's all connected. But I guess my point is that you have to kind of really go through that pain and face the fear to start that process, as you said, because that's where the healing is. It's in the pain.
Yeah, everything that kind of three-step process, that's exactly what I take my coaching clients through. Mm-hmm. Because it, I mean, 99% of what we're experiencing as adults, the problems that we face right now are from childhood. And
yes.
I walk through that same process. Okay, what was your earliest memory of that issue? And it's usually in childhood. And then we talk to the childhood self and we heal that, we forgive that. Mm-hmm. And then we talk to the present self, and then we talk to the higher self. And all three versions of us to come through, and then we integrate that, so we actually step up and become that next level version of ourselves so that we can move on and move forward.
Wow, I was doing it the Nicole Starbuck way.
you are super intuitive. You and I should talk a little bit more.
That's amazing. But yeah, it's powerful, right? It's still powerful. And I wish that I wish more people, I mean, this is kind of where my message is going with this new podcast, is that everything is energy. Mm-hmm. Everything is energy. And it makes sense when you think about it. I mean, you cannot do anything without energy. You can't even get up and walk to the refrigerator without energy. If it's something that we just think, well, if I'm low on energy, I'll just pop a caffeine pill or drink a cup of coffee or whatever and I'll be fine. I'm like, yeah, temporarily, but we actually have a lot of control of how we can process our energy. And it really has a lot to do with just listening to your body. right? And paying attention to your emotions. And once you can kind of get in tune with your body and your emotions, then you can start to make some effective changes, because that's when you start to realize, hey, wait a minute, I think that this conversation I had with my brother the other day is affecting the way I'm feeling right now. And this might be connected to this pain in my head that I'm feeling, right? And you start to see how things work together, and how an action that you can take today to actually face, to have the hard conversation or make the lifestyle change, can start the healing process for you. Sure. Yeah. It's so powerful. So Nicole, tell us, I know you have a journaling process. Can you talk a little bit about that?
I'm so excited, you guys. Yeah. This is life-changing. Yeah, so I have a 3-part journaling process that I personally use whenever I need something to change, whether that's in myself or in my life. And it's really, really powerful for manifesting. So I especially use it in relationships, like if I'm having resistance or friction in any area of my life. And it's more so about opening up perspective to allow me to see things from a different point of view. And I also use it in my business. So like when I'm wanting to bring in new clients or new business, or to like manifest more money coming in, it's also really, really effective.
That's always good.
Yeah. Before I talk about that, I just want to share like what I view as some of the benefits of journaling. Of course, I mentioned being able to shift your mindset, to be able to look at things from a different perspective, to raise your vibration, and also to improve your life, just your general sense of well-being and happiness. Mm-hmm. It also gives you the opportunity to just slow down and like look inward, to visualize your life, to envision what your future could look like, to be able to set goals and map out the action steps that you would need to take to make it happen. I think a lot of times we end up with all this anxiety because we have all these thoughts, but if we can sit down, slow down, and really work things out, then that gives us an actionable plan we can work with.
Yeah.
Then also the ability to manifest your dreams, because you have where you want to go and where you are now. But then once you have that plan, you can actually take actions towards that. So mm-hmm. you can move closer to your soul's desire and your life's purpose. Mm-hmm. Those are benefits. That's why I love it.
Yeah.
So I'm going to dive into that 3-step process and why it works.
Yeah.
So number one, start with gratitude. Think that you're grateful for that you already have. So list at least 10 things that you're grateful for, and don't just write them out, but really feel the gratitude as you're listing each item, like really understand and appreciate why that item is important to you. So a lot of times that's things like your spouse or your kids or your house or the money you do have in the bank or the food that you have on the table or any of those things.
Right.
And if that's really easy for you, like if you can just shoot off 10 things, like no problem, you probably need to challenge yourself a little bit more. So try 20 things. And if 20 is really easy for you, try 30 things and keep pushing yourself until it gets really difficult, because it makes you realize like how much you do take for granted, right? You can't list 10 things. Well, then maybe we should work on expanding gratitude. But if that's really easy, well, then how can we continue to find pleasure and find joy in the small things, the things that maybe no one else thinks of, like the fact that I'm looking at my window, like the fact that I have windows that aren't broken. Like that's something you don't, that some people don't have.
Yeah. Nicole, can you talk a little bit more about, because you said you need to feel like when you're writing your gratitude list, feel the gratitude, feel the goodness. Why is that so important?
I think you need to appreciate what you have in order for the universe to give you more. Mm-hmm. And I think if you're wanting to manifest something else, you're not really coming from a place of satisfaction and wholeness. You're coming from a place of lack.
Mm-hmm.
And that actually like is contrary. That kind of energy is going to work against your manifestation. So if you can appreciate everything that you have, then the universe is like, okay, she's ready for more. Let's give her more.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Great. All right. I'm ready for step two.
Number two. Okay. Write and recite at least 10 affirmations. So affirmation is going to be those I am statements. So I am confident. I am beautiful. I am fill in the blank. Whatever it is that you're wanting to bring into your life. Mm-hmm. So let's say this is for a relationship. Let's say you're having some trouble with your spouse. You can say, I am loving. I am lovable. I am attractive. I am sexy. Whatever the case may be, whatever it is you're wanting to bring into that relationship. Mm-hmm. Or let's say you're trying to use this for business. You would say, I am successful. I am wealthy. I am abundant. I am prosperous. Whatever it is you're wanting to bring in.
Right.
And as you're writing these things down, say them out loud and again, feel that energy. I'm going to talk about as if in a minute, but you want to feel it as if it's already true. And a lot of times if we're trying to bring something into our lives that doesn't feel like it's 100% us yet, like let's say you're wanting to bring in love and you say, well, I am loved, and you don't feel it. You might have to repeat it until it becomes like a part of your psyche.
Yeah. And I love this. You know, because I would record I still do, like, especially at the end of the beginning of every year, I record my affirmations for the year, which have my goals for the year kind of intertwined in them. And I listen to them almost every morning. I'm kind of, you know, and sometimes on my way to work, I'll just replay them. But when I started doing that, that was a real game changer because it puts me in that kind of that frame of mind, because I'm doing it at the beginning of the day. It puts me in the frame of mind to start looking for opportunities to actually manifest some of these things that I am affirming for myself. Yeah, that's pretty powerful.
It's really powerful too, because the brain doesn't know like if you're lying or telling the truth. So you can be like totally broke, like negative balance in the bank. But if you continue to affirm, I am wealthy, I am abundant, like you said, you're going to find opportunities to make that a reality.
Right. And you know what might be even helpful? I think I got this from a book I was listening to. But for some people, because when you say I am wealthy and you have no money, that can be really difficult. But sometimes if you just kind of tweak it, like every day I am learning to be more wealthy, or every day my bank account is growing, or so you kind of put it in the frame, in the perspective of this is actually becoming, like every day it is becoming, I am growing. Yeah.
And that leads me to the third step, which is what I view as stepping into that next level self, that higher self, because that's what we want, right? So that, like, how we can get from I am to I actually am.
Right. Yeah.
Is embodying that version of ourselves that already has all those things. So the third step is to describe your dream life or that dream scenario as if it's already happened.
Mm-hmm.
So really like get super detailed about what that would look like. So imagine your dream relationship, the love of your life, your soulmate, like the person you've always wanted. And what does that look like?
Mm-hmm.
Every last detail, like what did they look like? What's their personality? How do they treat you? What do you guys do together? What's the date? What's the wedding? Like all of these things, what's the day-to-day activities you guys are doing together? And same with your business. If you're using this for business, it's like, how many clients do you work with? What are you working on? Like, how much money are you bringing in? Like, what can that afford you? What kind of freedom do you have? What kind of time do you have? And get super detailed about it as if it's already happened.
Mm-hmm.
Because again, brain doesn't know if you're lying, right? So it's going to start to bring your real life into alignment with what you're affirming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I always go back to, because it's sometimes it's hard for people to grasp that the brain doesn't really get what's real and what's not real. But you can see the effect a thought has on you physically, especially you could see it in men. Hello. Like, right? Like your thoughts are super powerful and your brain doesn't really get like what it's real. But your body is reacting as if it is real. So yes, this is all like legit, truthful stuff that works because it's all just energy. Oh my gosh. It's so magical when I think about it, but and I wish that more people could just understand that it doesn't. We're just so stuck, as you said, in our childhood beliefs, and this is the way it is, and you got to work hard for this, and this can only happen this way. But what's behind that? What's the system behind all that stuff happening? It's the energy holding everything together. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so that was, so just as a review, so we want to write down our the things that we're grateful for, and we want to actually feel the gratitude as we're writing, and then we want to write out some affirmations and speak the affirmations out loud, right? And then we want to write out our dream life as if it has already happened and we're experiencing it now.
Yeah, like today I went on the most incredible date. The man of my dreams took me out to a 5-course meal, and you know, afterwards we went to a movie, and like describe it as if it has already happened. Like you're sitting down at the end of the day and this is all the wonderful things that have already happened.
Now, how long do you do this for, Nicole? Like, do you do all 3 steps in one day, or do you kind of like step one is day one, step two, or?
All at once.
All at once.
Yeah, I like to do it in the morning because I feel like it sets the tone for the day. Mm-hmm. You can't do it in the morning, you could obviously do it at night. I think at first I was doing it every day, like every day. Now I use it more so when there's something that I'm wanting to shift or change or bring into my life, and for however long is needed. So a lot of times that can be just a few days or a few weeks, or maybe it's a few months, but it's there as a tool for you whenever you need it, whether that's long-term or just a season.
Mm-hmm. And what have been some of the outcomes you've for yourself doing this?
Oh my goodness. I totally changed my perspective with my relationship. So my husband and I were going through yet another hard time, which is like, we got married really young, so we had all these like issues and stuff. But we were actually separated for a while, and I used this whole exercise to really bring clarity to my own life and like get clear on what I wanted, and you know, realizing that I wanted to be with him and work through our issues. And so coming back and also shifting my perspective, because coming back, you're still having some of the same friction, but like, you know, you want to work on it and make it better.
Right.
So it was able to totally change my relationship with my husband. So we went from being separated, almost getting divorced, to like getting back together, and then like a month or two later, like getting pregnant. So like, mm-hmm. like quantum leaping, like that's work that should have taken years of therapy that we were able to do in just a really short amount of time, in just a month or two.
Right, right. And I think I really love how you shared that, because a lot of times when we're in any relationship, it doesn't have to be romantic, it can be with your parents or friends or whatever, and there's some friction, we always want to blame the other person. Like, if you would only change, if you would only do this, but really it starts with you. Mm-hmm. And once you shift your perspective and your energy, then the situation will change, because as you said, you begin to get that clarity, and then the other person starts to respond to this new you that is emerging, right? Mm-hmm. And then you get to choose, like, you know, what direction you want to take it, but it starts with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I it's so good you mentioned it starts with you, because, you know, I left for a while, and I think it was like 1 or 2 or maybe 3 months I was gone. And I was getting ready. I was getting ready to file the papers. And I just had this like, it was almost like a zing, like right to my third eye. And it was this message from the universe. And it asked, "Can you honestly say that you did everything in your power to make it work?" And I couldn't answer in the affirmative. I couldn't say yes. I'm like, okay, like, you need to go fix this, because you did not do everything, and you didn't do everything on your end.
Right.
Work. And so this is what I did. You know, I would write down every day what I'm grateful for Raleigh. Raleigh is an incredibly loyal person, like almost loyal to a fault. Raleigh is a great provider. Raleigh is very affectionate. And I would write these things out. You know, Raleigh is this, Raleigh is that. Things that I'm grateful for. I'm so grateful that Raleigh is so, you know, affectionate. I'm so grateful that Raleigh is, you know, so loyal. And I would write these things out, and I would affirm, like, I am a great wife. I am like someone who's in a successful marriage. I am, and I would write these things out about my relationship, and then our dream life, you know, and it's funny, like now that I'm thinking about it, all these things that I wrote down in our dream life are the things that are happening now. Right. Wow. So like we had our first child and she's like fantastic, like everything that we dreamed of. And we were able to move closer to family and we bought our dream home. Like I didn't need to talk about my dream home, but our dream home. And, you know, now like, cause I always dreamed about us going into coaching together for a long time. It was just me and my private practice. And then like Raleigh had this like huge moment of clarity and he goes, oh my God, like I want to quit my job and like go into coaching with you. And I'm like, okay, great. Like, let's do it. So he's leaving his job and coming into coaching with me. We're actually now going to be offering relationship coaching.
Wow.
Yeah, so I'm pretty excited about that. So it works. Like, I don't know what else to say except that it works.
It all started with a pen and paper, ladies and gentlemen. That's amazing. You know, so can we talk a little bit about how much our relationships, and not just romantic, any relationship is reflecting something about you. Right? I think that's so, because I wanted to ask you, what do you think was blocking you from seeing all these magnificent things about your husband in the first place?
I think a lot of it had to do with not feeling loved or accepted for who I was. Because this was also during a time of huge spiritual awakening for me, where I had realized, you know, I had known for a long time that I was psychic, but I realized that this is something that I wanted to develop and that I was going to form a business around. And I think it made him uncomfortable because he, you know, also grew up in a conservative Christian family and he wasn't sure what to make of it. And I have a history of anxiety and depression. So he was worried, like maybe I was relapsing into some sort of mental illness. And there was some gaslighting going on that like, he didn't know what to believe. Like, is this the real Nicole? Is this a manic version of Nicole? Like, what is this? And because there was doubt from his end, it made me doubt myself. Mm-hmm. So what I was perceiving as somebody not loving or accepting me was actually me not loving and accepting myself. Because mm-hmm. I think if I had been truly confident in who I was and what I was doing, that wouldn't have bothered me. And I would have been able to stand my ground and not withdraw.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I'm glad you shared that, because when we have issues with our loved ones or our family or our friends, if we really pay attention to what the issue is, it's pointing out something that you need to unblock within yourself. Like it's just mirroring you. Like we're just mirrors for each other. So if I'm upset with my friend Susie because Susie is just always complaining, and I'm like, why are you always complaining, Susie? Oh my gosh. And we just get into arguments about why she's complaining. Well, guess what? I'm complaining too. Like, and so then I start thinking like, okay, so where do I complain in my life? And I realize that she's just mirroring something that I need to heal within myself. But a lot of times we don't want to look at that. And so we say, bye-bye, Susie. I can't deal with you. And then guess what? We just attract another friend like Susie. We just keep attracting the same type of people or the same type of lovers or the same type of whatever into our lives because we haven't healed the issue within ourselves.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I remember you know, I went to go stay with my mom, and I've shared my mom is conservative, and she had seen, like, I think I had put some of my tarot decks or oracle decks or something out. She had seen them and she was really uncomfortable with it. And she like confronted me about it, and I was able to share my perspective without getting upset. And that was the first time I was really able to do that with her or with anyone, really, like to defend myself in that way, respectfully, of course. And I thought, well, if I can do this with her, like, why couldn't I have done that with my husband? Like, why couldn't I have shared my perspective with my husband? And just little things like, you know, I brought the dogs with me when I went back home, and she wanted me to vacuum, you know, twice a week after the dogs and brush their hair and pick up the poop in the yard. And these were all things that I had resented doing because I was the one doing them when I was at home with Raleigh. And I'm like, well, if I'm willing to do it for her, why aren't I willing to do it when it's me and Raleigh, like just like little things, like
yeah but it's so connected, right? Like that fear of your mother seeing you for who you really are. Mm-hmm. Right, like that, and how that can play out into other, obviously your marriage or whatever, but it really helps if you can, if your parents are still living. I think this is what I keep having to tell myself, like really take advantage of the fact if your parents are still living, where you could have these conversations with them, because there's so much healing to take place in just having a very open, honest conversation, like what I had with my mother recently about my childhood trauma. And I didn't even realize how it had affected her, and she didn't even really think that it had affected me as it did, which was kind of revealing too. But just having had that conversation was enlightening, because it emboldened me and gave me the confidence, like if I can have this type of conversation with my mother, I can have this type of conversation at my job with my boss or my colleague or whatever. And it just, I stand differently, I walk differently, right? You just learn so much when you actually step into the fear.
And that's so funny, like as you're describing this, why is it so difficult for us to have these conversations with our loved ones, but we're totally willing to do it with strangers on social media? And it's because strangers see this version of ourselves, right? This filtered, curated version of us that we intentionally put out there. Mm-hmm. But to have someone that like really knows us, that loves us like in and out, like that's vulnerability. That even now, like Raleigh and I have conversations about vulnerability. It's like, well, like, what does it really mean to mm-hmm. be 100% seen and heard? And can you handle that?
I think it's because we have so much invested in our personal relationships, right? Like, you know, on social media, yeah, you can curate this image, and you feel like you have so much more control of that image because there's so much distance between you and your followers or your audience. There's not a whole lot of control the closer you are with someone, especially if they're living up in the same house as you. It's like, yeah. So it's again, that goes back to the issue of control. It's like, yes, so we're gonna try and be vulnerable here, but at the same time, you kind of want to be able to control their reaction. And then if their reaction isn't what you really want, can you control your reaction to their reaction? You know what I mean? Just so it's I think it boils down to that fear and
control. The thing that's coming through for me right now is this idea of expectation. Like if we can release expectations for ourselves, like what we should be doing or what the writing should be doing, like we can really come up with some interesting results. And if we can release the expectations of the outcome in our conversations with people and just be open to what they have to share, I think some beautiful things can come from that as well.
Yeah, I think that's, there's a book called Spiritual Partnership by Gary Zukav. It's like very life-changing for me, but His whole thesis is that the purpose of relationships, of all relationships, should be a spiritual partnership. And a spiritual partnership is where you basically help each other grow spiritually. Your job isn't to make each other feel good and fuzzy and whatever. I mean, it's not to be mean either. That's not it. But the purpose is that they will be showing you, basically reflecting to you, the parts of your personality that need to be challenged. And that can be so much more rewarding than seeing someone as, okay, your purpose is to make me feel good. Because then when that's your purpose, then the whole relationship is based on manipulation. Because now I need you to act this particular way for me to feel comfortable and for me to feel good. And what kind of relationship is that? That's when you get into all kinds of craziness.
Yeah, being constant validation like that, you're not doing your part in your own life and in the other person's life.
Exactly, yeah. But when you can step into a relationship and say, okay, like something just happened. This did not make me feel good. Why is that? Let me examine that. And then that's when the enlightenment happens. Like, okay, so this is something that I can take responsibility for instead of blaming it on this person. And it just, it's, it's a win-win situation, because once you start to take responsibility for your own feelings and your own actions, then that person totally responds to you differently, because you're not trying to manipulate and control them, their reaction, right? You're just letting them be, but you're learning about yourself in the process. And it's a way more easier, more productive relationship than...
I think that's another really great exercise for writing too. Like, people shy away from triggers a lot. Like, that's a buzzword now, trigger. It's like, oh, I'm triggered, so I'm just going to back away. Like, don't trigger me.
Yeah.
But I think it's worth digging into why you're feeling triggered.
Yeah.
Please. And that's a great exercise too, is like, well, why do you feel triggered? I feel triggered because I said something mean to you, but okay, dig deeper. Why does that matter that they were mean to you? Like, why does that make you feel bad? And like, really digging to the deep. And sometimes that question, why, can take us 5, 6, 7, even 10 levels deep before we get to the root issue, which again is probably in childhood, like most things.
Right.
But I think, yeah, you know, when we feel triggered, really examining, where does that come from? Why do you feel that way?
Yeah. Nicole, this has been a wonderful conversation. I am so happy that we reconnected. Can you tell us where we can find you?
Yes. So I am online. I'm on Instagram, nicole.starbuck. That's nicole.starbuck, like the coffee without the S on the end. You can also find me on my website, nicolestarbuck.com.
Thank you so much. Oh my goodness. Do you have any like closing words of wisdom and encouragement for someone who is maybe thinking of using writing to help them, but they're a little apprehensive of the pain?
Don't curate. Don't worry about grammar. Stream of consciousness is a really, really great place to start. Just taking the time to write down, even if it's 5 minutes, 10 minutes, whatever you can do, because a lot of times we just haven't been given the time or space to really share who we are, what we feel. But if you can do that for yourself, some really, really good things are going to come through.
Thank you so much, Nicole. Yeah. I'm going to stop recording, but I'm just going to chat with you for a minute. It's always insightful and a pleasure talking to Nicole, because she really does know about using writing as a tool for healing, because she's done it herself. She's published a book. She works with clients where she uses this writing as a tool for healing all the time. And if anything, if you picked up just one thing from this conversation, I hope it's that everyone has access to a pen and paper. Mostly everyone has access to a pen and paper or some type of a tablet, whether it's a laptop or an iPad or whatever, you have access to something where you could write something down, even if you just have a napkin and an ink pen. If you use those simple tools, a napkin, an ink pen, a keyboard, those simple tools can bring profound healing and change to your life. Words have power. The act of writing is power. And when you combine those tools, the pen, the paper, the napkin, the ink pen, the keyboard, with the power of words, with the power of writing, when you combine all of that with all of who you are, with the depth of who you are, you can't help but to heal something. And it might not come right away. You might jot something down that you might think is frivolous or not have any meaning whatsoever in the moment. And then 5, 10, maybe even just 2 years after you've written it, you reread it, suddenly it's so profound. Suddenly it makes sense. Suddenly there's a message there. So I hope that you check out Nicole's website and read her book and look at all that she has to offer, and also pick up a pen and paper and start writing about everything, about how you feel, about your insights, about your frustrations, and see what comes up. Just be open, what comes up. In the meantime, you could also visit my website, zazo.com, and sign up for my newsletter. You can follow me on social media. I'm on Twitter at Ebony Haywood and Facebook at Motivation to Write. And I'm on Facebook at Motivation to Heal and also on Instagram at Motivation to Write. Thank you so much for tuning in. And I will see you next week when I talk to another fabulous guest. Bye-bye.